This is the Late Round Podcast with your host, JJ Zacharisa.
What's up, everyone? It's JJ Zacharyson, the editor-in-chief at FanDuel and at NumberFire.com, and this is episode 237 of the Late Round Podcast, one of the many shows that are part of the NumberFire Podcast Network. Say it with me. Thanks for tuning in. I've got a short work week, so this is a special Wednesday edition of the Late Round Podcast Mailbag. I couldn't go a week without answering your fantasy football-related questions, apparently. Before we get to those questions, though, I wanted to let you know that with the NBA playoffs underway, FanDuel is offering you a free shot at two tickets to the NBA Finals. Every night of the playoffs from now until May 14th, they'll run a free qualifier with $1,000 in prizes. If you win, you will then advance to another contest at the end of the playoffs where you could win a share of $20,000 in prizes and two tickets to the finals. For more information on the NBA Fantasy Playoffs, visit FanDuel.com or download the app today. Eligibility restrictions may apply. This first question is an email. It says, JJ, love the pod. Thanks, I love you. The rookie scouting info has been great. My question is, where do you see the big tier break in this year's first round for rookies and Superflex? For reference, I have pick 111, and I'm wondering how much should I try to move back or forward? And obviously, the NFL draft can change this. Thanks, Danny from Orlando, Florida. So I mentioned this on last week's show, or I think it was on last week's show, but my top players in rookie drafts right now are N'Keal Harry, Hakeem Butler, and A.J. Brown. I think after those three, there's a drop in tier. But in Superflex, it's a little bit different. I think Kyler Murray is pretty much the locked-in 101 in a Superflex draft. So to your question about how much you should try to move back or forward, at 111, you're not really close to being at that big tier break. And as I've been saying, there's a lot of things that are going to change once the draft is over, so estimating where that tier drop will be is going to be difficult. The one thing I keep going back to is that I do think that there are a lot of viable wide receivers in this class, but there aren't as many obvious studs. I really do like those three wideouts I named, so Harry, Butler, and Brown. I think that they're really good bets. But depending on landing spot, you can make the case for probably five or six different wideouts to be ranked fourth. That means there's going to be plenty of players in that same tier when you're up to pick at 111. Considering all of this, I've admittedly traded back more than I've traded up this year. I was hoping that teams would devalue those earlier round picks more than they have, considering everyone knows that it's not a very top-heavy draft. But since it's not a top-heavy draft, I'm okay with getting more players in an effort to hit with some of them. So without knowing more about your team, your needs, how the draft typically goes, my general feelings towards rookie drafts this year is to trade back. But I think you're fine in the 111 spot for a Superflex draft because there's a chance a good wide receiver falls, or you can always get a running back who ends up going to the right spot in the draft. So you do have some flexibility there. This next question is from at Ross Verba. Better season, Mark Ingram or Latavius Murray? So I know I sent a tweet out about a month or so ago about how the Saints have consistently ranked first or second in running backs points scored over the last decade, but my answer here is Ingram. My projections say the same thing too. Ingram comes in with 237 rush attempts and almost 1,100 rushing yards. He gets hurt in the passing game with these projections, but it's not like Latavius Murray is projected to be any better as a receiver given the role that he's going to play in New Orleans. And since he won't see as much work on the ground, the edge goes to Ingram. As of right now, Ingram is the RB24 in my projections. Latavius is RB33. So there's a pretty decent chunk from one player to the next. This next question is an email from Mike. It says, do you look at other analysts' projections to gauge your own or to see if you're higher or lower on players? Yes, absolutely. As an analyst, my goal is to teach you guys the things that I'm studying, to be accurate, and to be entertaining. The way I become accurate is through learning. And I know that I'm not going to see every piece of news or completely and precisely project every single role a player is going to play in a given season. No one will. So that means I need to see what others are seeing in order to run through my own process and see if there's something that I'm missing. So let's just run through an example. Let's say my projections are finished and I seem to be way lower on Sony Michel than the consensus. Not just the consensus in terms of ADP, but the majority of analysts. That's going to make me second guess my projection for Sony Michel. Now some of you might be sitting there and thinking to yourself that that's bad to second guess, but I think that's garbage. Second guessing doesn't mean that you change your process. It means you go and make sure that your process makes sense. So if I go and look at Sony Michel's projection and realize that nothing is wrong with it, then I'll be even more confident in touting Michel as someone who's being overdrafted. If I realize that there's an issue there objectively, then I'll fix that issue. There has to be subjectivity in how you play fantasy football. Like, there's some subjectivity in how rushing share and target share numbers are calculated. You're looking at historical trends, but you're still intuitively moving some pieces around to get that proper projection. And that's just one example. You're also subjectively going to project a certain role a player is going to play. How do you know how many snaps Chris Godwin is going to play in the slot next year? How do you know how many passing downs Darius Geis will be on the field for? You don't know the answer to either of those questions with certainty. You use information and you find a likely outcome for those questions. It's not like a computer can sit there and just play fantasy football for you. There's some human input that goes into the things that you do and the moves that you make throughout a fantasy season. So basically what I'm saying is, to assume that your brain will have all the answers is arrogant. That's just my honest opinion. You can definitely be confident that you'll be better than other people at playing the game and analyzing it. But ignoring what others are producing because you don't want to be influenced, I don't think that's smart. Because you're not going to catch everything. And looking at what other smart people are doing, that allows you to catch more potential flaws in your own process. So yes, I pay attention to what other smart analysts are saying and projecting. It honestly helps me become more confident in what I'm doing. This next question is from @JamilLane53. How do you rank second tier year two wide receivers? Wide receivers like Anthony Miller, James Washington, and Dante Pettis. So I guess the second tier of guys wouldn't include DJ Moore and Calvin Ridley. So that leaves us with the guys that you mentioned. So Anthony Miller, James Washington, Dante Pettis, and probably Cortland Sutton, Christian Kirk, and maybe guys like Kiki Kuti, Deshaun Hamilton, and Traquan Smith. But at this point, I wouldn't be ranking those latter three ahead of the other guys. My projections say the order should be Pettis, Kirk, Sutton, Anthony Miller, and then James Washington. And I would probably agree with that. Pettis has a lot of potential if San Francisco doesn't do a whole lot in the draft at wide receiver, and the new Arizona offense allows Christian Kirk to have a lot of upside as well. I actually think that there could be a decent drop in tier after those guys. Sutton comes out looking all right in my projections, but he doesn't have the same type of potential given the offense that he's in. So that's how I would rank things. Pettis first, then Kirk, then a drop to Sutton, Miller, and then James Washington. And DJ Moore is the best in last year's class. You guys know that I love me some DJ Moore. This next question is from @Steven0128. If you're a contender in a dynasty league when you're doing your rookie draft, do you look for a high floor and guy that you could start in an emergency, or do you look for a high ceiling that could become a regular starter but could also be worthless? So I think that we probably overstate what ceiling and floor means as it pertains to the NFL draft and drafting players in rookie drafts. With guys who are already in the league, we know ceiling and floor is just the variance in how many points a player is going to score in that particular offense. But with rookie drafts, you have less of an idea as to how these players will do at the NFL level. And then on top of that, you have less of an idea of how their teams are going to want to use them. So your overall projection is going to be far worse. That's why our rookie draft ADP success is so much worse compared to what we get from redraft leagues each year. We're better at projecting when we have more stable information. So the way that I think that we view ceiling and floor in rookie drafts isn't so much this guy could be really good or really bad, but rather we don't have enough information on this guy to really know who he is. And a good example of that is Paris Campbell. Campbell wasn't asked to go deep at Ohio State. He had just 2 deep ball receptions last year according to Pro Football Focus. Does that mean that he's a high ceiling player? I guess that you could categorize him as that, but that's only because we just don't know. And I don't think that's a reason to then draft him over someone that you perceive as safe. Because oftentimes, that safe player, he can exceed your ceiling expectation. Because as I just said, we're pretty bad at scouting these guys. But in the case of being a contender, it all depends. If you're like one running back away from being a powerhouse, then you may want to take the guy who's going to see a ton of volume right away at the position. But if you're a team that's really good for the next 2 years up and down your roster, then taking on a player who might not be as pro-ready is a lot easier to do. So it depends on your roster. But I do think that thinking in terms of ceiling and floor with draft prospects can get you into trouble, because it often forces you to ignore that safe players are often high variance and ceiling players are often safe. We just know so little to confidently categorize most of these players that way. This next question is from @Reagan_EDE. What are some good ways to make tight end and defense valuable in redraft leagues? And if we can't make them valuable, should we keep them in redraft leagues? So the main way to make positions more important is by adding more positional slots in your lineup for that position. But you can't really do that for tight end and defense because the supply dries up pretty fast. I mean, I guess that you could for defense, but that wouldn't be very fun from a predictability standpoint. I would argue, though, that tight end isn't as bad as people think. The position certainly isn't deep, but that's forced players like Travis Kelce and George Kittle to have pretty high ADPs. They're being drafted high, and that's really what we want here. The position isn't deep enough for us to have 20 tight ends drafted in the first five rounds. Like, it's almost impossible for that to happen. Not only that, but let's just say that you make tight ends more important by doubling the position's lineup slots. All of a sudden, Travis Kelce is easily a first rounder. But are you then going to take someone like Kyle Rudolph in the fourth? Realistically, the difference between Kyle Rudolph and the tight end 20 isn't going to be that dramatic. It's just really a top-heavy position, so it's tough to add another lineup slot for tight ends. The one way to at least give tight ends a little bit more value is to change the scoring. Make it a tight end premium league. That'll force Kelce and Kittle and Ertz to be even more valuable, all while allowing league managers to strategize around the position. But I actually think that things are fine right now. If you want to take defenses out of your league, I've got no issue with that. Even tight ends. But I don't think tight end is nearly as much of an S show as the industry says. If it was, then we wouldn't have any tight ends being drafted early. This next question is from @FFTylerO. Where is the best landing spot for your favorite rookie wide receiver and running back? Best in terms of having a fantasy impact their rookie year. So N'Keal Harry is my favorite rookie wide receiver, and I don't really know if I have a favorite running back in this class. Maybe Miles Sanders? I won't necessarily rank Sanders or even David Montgomery, who I like a lot, at RB1 pre-draft because Josh Jacobs is supposed to go earlier, but those are two of my favorites in this class. At running back, and I talked about this last week on the Mailbag show, there are some locations that they could go to get volume right away. One of them is Oakland, or maybe Tampa Bay or Chicago. Now for N'Keal Harry, I'd love to see him go to New Orleans or Indianapolis. I think the reason for that is fairly obvious. I will say though, I don't think that there's one singular landing spot that I want for any particular guys. I think it's more about avoiding landmine spots. Like if you guys remember last year, I was really into John Kelly as a late round pick. And then he was drafted by the Rams, so that dream died instantly. He's going to be playing behind Todd Gurley. I just don't want a player like N'Keal Harry to go to a place like Baltimore. As I talked about on last week's Mailbag show, the Ravens are looking like a team that is going to just waste away wide receiver talent for fantasy purposes. This last question is from @BrianMaloneFF. What's your favorite way to watch the draft? Networks? Live fantasy show? Twitter? Some combination of the above? I usually have a network running so I can actually see what's going on, and then I have Twitter as a companion for all the horrible takes that come when a player is drafted. But I'm also working during the draft, so I'm typically sitting next to my laptop so I can also fire off those bad takes. But speaking of which, I'm going to be live blogging the draft this year, at least days one and two. So I'll be sending out a link close to the draft on Twitter, which you can follow me @LateRoundQB, and I'll be giving fantasy-driven insights on the picks and throwing in some projections as well. So hopefully you guys are able to check that out. But that's going to do it for today's Mailbag show. Thanks to all of you guys for listening. If you've yet to subscribe to the Late Round Podcast, make sure you are by searching for it on iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, TuneIn, Stitcher, and Spotify. And again, if you're on iTunes, please do me a favor and leave a rating and review. Thanks, everyone. I'll talk to you next week.